Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Yes, just gone 8:33 Central African time. We're really having a mashallah beautiful morning with you on the program. Consciously connected, Boniface in top form also, alhamdulillah, and joined by our very own member of parliament, leader of the NFP, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam. Ahmad, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And how's the last 10 days of Ramadan treating you, Ahmad?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, brother. A little bit hectic though. Had to fly yesterday to Johannesburg in the morning and late in the afternoon to Cape Town. But beautiful, mashallah, day in Cape Town already. You can see the blue sky. It's a little bit chilly the early hours of the morning and late nights particularly. But during the course of the day, beautiful weather, no doubt about it.
Absolutely, yes, Ahmad. You know, you talk about the weather, you talk about everything. And I was yesterday a brother told me, Shafaat, if you talk to Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, and I want you to pose this question to him. And there's a question the brother wanted you to answer, Ahmad. He says, why is the Zulu monarchy so quiet during this period of disaster? Surely the Zulus look up to the royals for support and solace, but nothing from the monarchy. How true is that? I mean, the Zulu monarchy, the infighting, I believe the new king hasn't been inaugurated and so forth. Talk to us, Ahmad.
Yes, that is clearly the case, that there is that internal faction war that's going on. These guys have gone back to court again. Even though government and the president recognizes the new king, Mrs. Zulu, that matter is going on, so there's a lot of concentration, but that should not be the reason why you should be visibly active in terms of when there's a crisis of this nature. And yes, I think they should be in the forefront for various reasons, because, you know, they have a very large following in KwaZulu-Natal, number one. Number two, people also contribute extensively to the Ingonyama Trust then and things like that. And also you would notice that even the IFP, which runs a lot of municipalities and things and very close to the king, has done very little or nothing as well, you know, to assist the people there. But I think that in terms of the responding to the question by the brother, I think the internal affection. And remember that Mrs. Zulu is young. He's, you know, whether he really makes has what it takes to be the real king and do what King Goodwill Zwelithini did. And remember, King Goodwill Zwelithini's been there for a long period of time, built that relationship with people, and, you know, was able to get involved in a lot of the activities and things. And he was quite respected by a large percentage of the people then. Yeah, with what is going on and the infighting, you know, is, I think, having an effect on it. And whether King Mrs. Zulu is going to be able to lead the Zulu nation, you know, there's a lot of controversial comments that's coming as far as that is concerned. But remember, he wasn't even given the opportunity whilst the father was alive to be able to play that role. You know, to a very large extent, he was outside of that Zulu monarchy. You know, this is the problem I think that we're facing. But I think he needs, once the matter is settled and he has more time to settle in, he will perhaps get more involved. But at this stage, I think the crisis that is unfolding in the Zulu royal household. And can you imagine, you know, then they still come up and make bold statements. No, no, we are united. You can't be united when you are fighting each other and you are, you know, half brothers and sisters and things of that nature. But this is what dominates society today, whether you talk about politics, whether you talk about traditional leaders, whether you talk about unions, you know, people are just at loggerheads. Everybody's at each other's throats. It just shows from where to where we have gone in the last 30 years or even more, you know, how we are moving in an opposite direction. Everybody wants to be in power. Everybody wants to be in control. Everybody wants the resources. It's not about the people. If you look at the havoc in KwaZulu-Natal, the chaos, the crisis in terms of the flooding, Brother Shafa, there were 77 floods in 30 years, in from 1980 to 2010, in KwaZulu-Natal. Now, if that was the case, then the question is, why have you not done anything? And I'm not saying you can totally, you know, prevent this flooding, but I'm sure you can put a lot of measures. Like, for example, if you knew people are living under dangerous conditions in risky areas, close to rivers, on river banks, in such shocking conditions, did it take so many people to die? Now, you know, after having 77 of those disasters in 30 years, and that's only up to 2010, I'm not even talking about after them, for you to decide that we must do something about it. If you look at yesterday, what happened, it's shocking, Brother Shepherd. The woman that was responsible, employed by Itegwini to ensure that there's some accountability in terms of the distribution of the water through the tankers, was shot dead in Ottawa, in Jerusalem. I mean, what is it actually telling you, that people can do anything and everything? That Senzo Meiwa case is going on right now, and five of those people, I think, that are accused. And clearly, if you look at the evidence that it's leading, it just shows how cheap life is to these people, that they can just call. I mean, this woman, her responsibility is to ensure that water is distributed efficiently, effectively, and goes to the areas where it is not being abused. And look at the ultimate price that she had to pay. It's the same thing as Babita Deokaran. When she had to do what is right, she was removed completely. They assassinated her. What a society we are living in. I mean, really, you know, it's just totally unacceptable.
I was talking to Councillor Ahmed Parak, and he said the criminal elements, if anyone that does the work very efficiently, they want them out of the equation because they're looking for overtime and they're looking for ways of exploiting and getting more money for the type of work that they do, even if it's a very easy work. And, you know, we have 540 informal settlements here in the Durban region, and with a population of 35,000, Ahmed. And, you know, I'm wondering, what are the figures around the country when you look at informal settlements and amount of people living in informal settlements, Ahmed?
I don't have those figures, Brother Shepherd. I can look it up, and the next time we're on the air, we can get some more accurate figures. But I can tell you that, I mean, you know, particularly in the urban areas, a very large percentage of the most vulnerable and poor people are all living in informal settlements. Now, when I say urban areas, is because, remember, there's no job or very limited job opportunities in the rural areas. So this is that migration system of the apartheid days continue today, where people will go out to seek work in other provinces and you know, and only go home once a year. So people here come and live in the urban areas. And when they come here, you don't have the capacity. Let me give you, Itegwini, he's got about 440,000 people on the waiting list for a house. And I can tell you a large percentage of people haven't even applied. Cape Town has got over 500,000. How many houses have you built? 4,000 houses in a year. 4,000 houses in a year to 440,000 houses. Not forgetting that there's a million people being born in this country every day that eventually all have to come into the system. Now, if you don't deal with these crises, how are you going to eradicate the shortage in terms of housing and the conditions under which the people are living? You're not, the government, the country itself is not preparing for this additional rise in the population. There's not enough economic growth. There's not enough job opportunities. There's not enough housing opportunities that is being created. There's not enough infrastructure to accommodate these people. Over and above that, the infrastructure that you have currently is crumbling. Okay, how do you expect this? Is this not a ticking time bomb waiting to explode? Because you're not addressing the needs of the country. Now, you know, about two years ago or 3 years ago, when the president even spoke about job creation and he said he was creating 400 jobs, I said, but I can't understand this. You are talking about creating 400 jobs, but there's 800 people entering the job market. So what does that mean? An additional 400,000 people every year, which will be increasing, right, on an annual basis, are unemployed. What does that mean? Is that not a ticking time bomb? Because what are these people that are idle and not being able to survive and sustain themselves going to do? that is giving rise to the increase in acts of criminality. Now, if we don't sit down and address these things, it's not going to get any better, because these houses are not going to fall from the sky. Giving them better water is not going to fall from the sky. Creating these jobs is not, that is what we are there as government. And then the question that arises, are we really led in this country? Do we have leadership in this country? Are they taking us, are they directing us, you know, to a more prosperous South Africa? No, it's not. Because we've gone downhill. We're not achieving much. So, and I'm not saying nothing has been done. I think very little has been done compared to what we can actually do. So you know, it unless you deal with this problem holistically, Brother Sharon, it is bound to explode at some time. That is why you would find currently we are taking out our frustration on the foreign nationals. Look at this guy. He goes and burns the train only because he wants to make more money through the taxis. Can you imagine? And he gets a 20-year sentence. Look at the logic behind it. He goes and burns the train. And he gets 20 years, and you, the taxpayer, will now have to fund him for the next 20 years with his meals and everything in prison. That's basically what you have to do.
Yeah, it sounds like we're imploding all around, Ahmed. And when you look at a question here again, it says, Shafaz and Ahmed Manzoor, I'd like to bring back the story of the monarchy. They are captured by the ANC government because they are their paymasters and they're giving them a stipend every year. What's the stipend is the monarchy gets from the ANC? And, you know, it seems as if the royal family has to be in good books with the ANC. How does it work? Tell us, Ahmed.
Brother Shafaz, it's not a stipend. It's a lot more than a stipend. Let's put it to you that way. First of all, they get money because they're traditional leaders from national government. He gets a budget from the provincial government, which, if I remember, was about 88 million or something like that. But anyway, I think it's much more. They get that. They got all the vehicles and everything are provided. Then they get money for development in those areas. Then the monarchy is getting money through the Ingonyama Trust, because all these people that live on those things, they who have no title deed, no ownership of that land, nothing else, all contribute. Okay, they pay to the Ingonyama Trust land. Okay, so the monarchy is getting money from all angles, and it's a considerable amount of taxpayers' money that actually goes there. And that is the reason why many people have also raised concerns among the Zulu nation that they, you know, with all what they're paying, they're living on this land for so long. You're talking about expropriation without compensation. What about us? Because we have no rights over this land. We have no title deeds over this land. We can't do anything we want to do on this. There's no development in our areas. Let's ask ourselves, in terms of tourist attraction, in terms of job creation, in terms of large-scale development in these areas, what role has the monarchy played in that? Very little or nothing, Brother Shafaz. Why? If you don't develop your own areas, how is the quality of life of your people going to improve? It's not. But where is the monies are going? The monies are going into their own personal expenditure with the different number of wives and the beautiful cars and their travel. And this is what it is all about. So you know, while we will say that the government and country recognizes traditional leaders and things, and very selective, because the Khoi and San is not recognized as much as the others are in this country. But be that as it may, look at the amount of money. Now, you made a very important point, and I think the caller made that important point about the ANC. It's not just the ANC. It's the IFP to a larger extent in KwaZulu-Natal who defends and protects the monarchy, because it's all about votes. And you are also correct that the ANC will never want to take on the royal monarchy. If you remember, Brother Shafaz, not long ago, there was an investigation because the audit report found the Ingonyama Trust wanting because their financials were not up to date, and it gave another story. What has happened to that? Nothing. So, you know, there's no accountability. But it's all about the vote. You need these people because of the role that they play in society or the support that they command on the ground. And so you're going to have to toe the line with them, and that is why you would find political leaders. I'll give you a good example. If you remember when we started that story about the expropriation without compensation, and Julius Malema was one of them that said, yes, all of them, including Ngonya Matrasland, the moment he landed in Durban, he changed his story completely, 360 degrees. Immediately he said, no, he didn't say that. He said it loud and clear, it's on record. No, it's not. So you want to expropriate from the others, or the so-called white men, you're saying, but you don't want to give the same people whose rights are being violated in terms of ownership of land, which belongs to the state. How can you be selective in expropriation without compensation? Not that it's actually going to work. So it's all about the ballot box. It's all about the vote. So whatever you say and whatever you do and whoever you associate with, it's all about what is that person offering you in return. What are the consequences if we have to take on certain people? You know, this is what it is all about. And if you do the right thing, like I think you said, the Councillor Ahmed Parak said, if you do the right thing, you've got too many enemies. You do the wrong thing, you've got many friends. That's the problem with politics.
Yeah, absolutely, Ahmed. And it's very sad indeed that it happens to be like that. But you know, Jazakallah Khair for joining us this morning. Busy schedule, flying from here to Johannesburg, from Johannesburg to Cape Town. You really do what you do, and we embrace and celebrate you in walking the talk in Parliament. Your parting words before I let you go,
yes,
Ahmed.
Jazakallah for that. Just a very, you know, we've had in the last couple of days, new infections on a daily basis is an average of about 4,000, 4,230 yesterday, 4.5 the day before, 4,700 the day before that. The numbers appear to be rising. If you see, Italy had 70,000 new infections on Saturday alone with 143 deaths. I really don't know what is going on, but there's a massive increase, not only on new infections, but also on the, there's a rare concern being raised about waterborne diseases, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and I think Northwest, as a result of the flooding. Very important, the water that you are consuming at the moment in these areas that are being delivered to you, Brother Shavu, people need to be careful. They need to boil this water, make sure that they are safe, because I'm told the quality of the water is not good. So even if you're washing your fruits and whatever it is, for giving it to children, I'm told children are affected very much. Most of the hospitalization are coming from young people and children, so we need to be a little bit concerned. So please make sure your fruits and whatever it is washed with purified water rather than the water that's there, because children are at high risk, I'm told, at the moment.
Well, Ahmed, don't go. There's another question here for you, and it says, Ahmed Mansoor Sheikh Imam, please inform us on what will happen with the water infrastructure of this country. It seems as if pipes have been lost, and will this country ever recover? Ahmed?
Well, you know, you're losing, if you take a municipality like you tell, you're losing about half the water. 50% of your water goes away because of the poor quality of the infrastructure, for starters. Now, remember, you first of all, you've got to ensure there is new infrastructure being put in place. At the same time, you have to maintain the other one. The current infrastructure is in such a poor state, Brother Chap, such a poor state that I'm not even sure whether you can, in fact, you know, go and remedy that right now.
Mm.
So while if you have not been maintaining this, and this has been going on for many years, and this is a countrywide problem. It is for that reason, 5-6 years ago, I drew the attention to trade and industry, water and sanitation, because some of those heavy-duty goods that we use, the pipes and things like that, are imported from India, China, and the United States. I said, create an industry in this country, it's job creation, and you're going to be using this thing all the time. You can even export. To date, they have done very little or nothing about it. So I want to tell you, for the next couple of years, 10, 15 years, you're going to have a crisis in terms of water. There's no doubt about it. Because where is the budget to be able to go and maintain that infrastructure that's in such poor quality, and at the same time provide an alternative, which is new infrastructure? Because like I said, some of them are beyond the state of repair at the moment. So you've got a massive problem.
Yeah, JazakAllah khair, because we have our Professor Andre Duvanagar waiting patiently the other end. Ahmed, you have a blessed day ahead, and we'll talk to you soon, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ahmed Mandur Sheikh Imam, keeping us up to speed. Up to speed there.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.